This is side two of tape one of the book A Traveler's Narrative, continuing from page 24. In Zanjan and Nasri, likewise at the decree of the erudite doctors and notable lawyers, a bloodthirsty military force attacked and besieged. In Zanjan, the chief was Mullah Muhammad Ali, the Mutajid, while in Nasri's Sayyid Yahya of Darab was the leader and arbiter. At first they sought to bring about a reconciliation, but, meeting with cruel ferocity, they reached the pitch of desperation, and the overpowering force of the victorious troops having cut off every passage of flight, they unclosed their hands in resistance. But although they were very strong in battle, and amazed the chiefs of the army by their steadfastness and endurance, the overwhelming military force closed the passage of light and broke their wings and feathers. After numerous battles, they too at last yielded to covenants and compacts, oaths and promises, vows registered on the Quran, and the wonderful stratagems of the officers, and were all put to the edge of the sword. Were we to occupy ourselves in detail with the wars of Nariz and Zanjan, or to set forth these events from beginning to end, this epitome would become a bulky volume. So, since this would be of no advantage to history, we have passed them over briefly. During the course of the events which took place at Zanjan, the Prime Minister devised a final and trenchant remedy. Without the royal command, without consulting with the ministers of the subject protecting court, he, acting with arbitrary disposition, fixed determination and entirely on his own authority, issued commands to put the Bab to death. This befell, in brief, as follows. The governor of Adirbajan, Prince Amiz Amirza, was unwilling that the execution of this sentence should be at his hands, and said to the brother of the Amir, Mirza Hasan Khan, "This is a vile business, and an easy one. Anyone is capable and competent. I had imagined that His Excellency the Regent would commission me to make war on the Afghans or Uzbegs, or appoint me to attack and invade the territory of Russia or Turkey." So Mirza Hasan Khan wrote his excuse in detail to the Amir. Now the Sayyid Bab had disposed all his affairs before setting out from Chirik towards Tabriz, and he placed his writings and even his ring and pen case in a specially prepared box, put the key of the box in an envelope, and sent it to the means of Mullah Bakir, who was one of his first associates, to Mullah Abdul Karim of Qazvin. This first Mullah Bakir delivered over to Mullah Abdul Karim of Qum in presence of a numerous company. At the solicitations of those present, he opened the lid of the box and said, "I am commanded to convey this trust to Baha'u'llah. More than this, ask not of me, for I cannot tell you." Importuned by the company, he produced a long epistle in blue, penned in the most graceful manner, with the utmost delicacy and firmness, in a beautiful, minute shishtaki hand, written in the shape of a man so closely that it would have been imagined that it was a single wash of ink on the paper. When they had read this epistle, they perceived that he had produced 360 derivatives of the word Baha. Then Mullah Abdul Karim conveyed the trust to its destination. Well, we must return to our original narrative. The Prime Minister issued a second order to his brother Mirza Hasan Khan, the gist of which order was this: obtain a formal and explicit sentence from the learned doctors of Tabriz, who are the firm support of the Church of Jafar, upon him be peace, and the impregnable stronghold of the Shiite faith. Summon the Christian regiment of Urmuyi, suspend the Bab before all the people, and give orders for the regiment to fire a volley. Mirza Hasan Khan summoned his chief of the Farashis and gave him his instructions. They removed the Bab's turban and sash, which were the signs of his Sayyidhood, brought him with four of his followers to the barrack square of Tabriz, confined him in a cell, and appointed 40 of the Christian soldiers of Tabriz to guard him. Next day, the chief of the Farashis delivered over to the Bab and a young man named Aka Muhammad Ali, who was of the noble family of Tabriz, to Sam Khan, colonel of the Christian regiment of Urmuyi. At the sentences of the learned divine, Mullah Muhammad of Mama Khan, of the second ecclesiastical authority, Mullah Mirza Bakir, and of the third ecclesiastical authority, Mullah Murtada Akuli, and others, an iron nail was hammered into the middle of the staircase of the very cell wherein they were imprisoned, and two ropes were hung down. By one rope, the Bab was suspended, and by the other rope, Aka Muhammad Ali, both being firmly bound in such wise that the head of the young man was on the Bab's breast. The surrounding housetops billowed with teeming crowds. A regiment of soldiers ranged itself in three files. The first file fired, then the second, and then the third file discharged volleys. From the fire of these volleys a mighty smoke was produced. When the smoke cleared away, they saw that young man standing, and the Bab seated by the side of his amanuensis, Aka Seyyid Hussein, in the very cell from the staircase on which they had suspended him. To neither of them had the slightest injury resulted. Sam Khan, the Christian, asked to be excused. The turn of service came to another regiment, and the chief of the Farishis withheld his hand. Aka John Big of Kamshi, colonel of the bodyguard, advanced, and they again bound the Bab together with that young man to the same nail. The Bab uttered certain words which those few who knew Persian understood, while the rest heard but the sound of his voice. The colonel of the regiment appeared in person, and it was before noon on the 28th day of Shaban in the year A.H. 1266, 9 July 1850. Suddenly he gave orders to fire. At this volley the bullets produced such an effect that the breasts of the victims were riddled, and their limbs were completely dissected, except their faces, which were but little marred. Then they removed those two bodies from the square to the edge of the moat outside the city, and that night they remained by the edge of the moat. Next day the Russian consul came with an artist and took a picture of those two bodies in the posture wherein they had fallen at the edge of the moat. On the second night, at midnight, the Babis carried away the two bodies. On the third day the people did not find the bodies, and some supposed that the wild beasts had devoured them, so that the doctors proclaimed from the summits of their pulpits, saying, "The holy body of the Immaculate Imam and that of the true Shiite are preserved from the encroachment of beasts and of prey and creeping things and wounds, but the bodies of this person had the wild beasts torn in pieces." But after the fullest investigation and inquiry, it hath been proved that when the Bab had dispersed all his writings and personal properties, and it had become clear and evident from various signs that these events would shortly take place. Therefore, on the second day of these events, Suleymanyan Khan, the son of Yahya Khan, one of the notables of Adhirbanjan, devoted to the Bab, arrived and proceeded straightway to the house of the mayor of Tabriz. And since the mayor was an old friend, associate, and confidant of his, since, moreover, he was of the mystic temperament and did not entertain aversion or dislike for any sect, Suleymanyan Khan divulged his secret to him, saying, "Tonight I, with several others, will endeavor by every means and artifice to rescue the body. Even though it be not possible, come what may, we will make an attack, and either attain our object or pour out our lives freely in this way." "Such troubles," answered the mayor, "are in no wise necessary." He then sent one of his private servants, named Haji Allah Yar, who, by whatever means and proceedings it was, obtained the body without trouble or difficulty, and handed it over to Haji Suleymanyan Khan. And when it was morning, the sentinels, to excuse themselves, said that the wild beasts had devoured it. That night they sheltered the body in the workshop of a Babi of Milan. Next day they manufactured a box, placed it in the box, and left it as a trust. Afterwards, in accordance with instructions which arrived from Tehran, they sent it away from Adhirbanjan, and this transaction remained absolutely secret. Page 28. Now in these years, A.H. 1266 and 67, throughout all Persia, fire fell on the households of the Babis, and each one of them, in whatever hamlet he might be, was, on the slightest suspicion arising, put to the sword. More than 4,000 souls were slain, and a great multitude of women and children, left without protector or helper, distracted and confounded, were trodden down and destroyed. And all these occurrences were brought about solely by the arbitrary decision and command of Mirza Taqi Khan, who imagined that by the enactment of a crushing punishment, this sect would be dispersed and disappear in such wise that all sign and knowledge of them would be cut off. Ere long had passed, the contrary of his imagination appeared, and it became certain that the Babis were increasing. The flame rose higher, and the contagion became swifter. The affair waxed grave, and the report thereof reached our other climes. At first it was confined to Persia. Later it spread to the rest of the world. Quaking and affliction resulted in constancy and stability, and grievous pains and punishment caused acceptance and attraction. The very events produced an impression. Impression led to investigation, and investigation resulted in increase. Through the ill-considered policy of the minister, this edifice became fortified and strengthened, and these foundations firm and solid. Previously, the matter used to be regarded as commonplace. Subsequently, it acquired a grave importance in men's eyes. Many persons from all parts of the world set out for Persia and began to seek with their whole hearts. For it hath been proved by experience in the world that in the case of such matters of conscience, laceration causeth healing, censure produceth increased diligence, prohibition induceth eagerness, and intimidation createth avidity. The root is hidden in the very heart, while the branch is apparent and evident. When one branch is cut off, other branches grow. Thus it is observed that when such matters occur in other countries, they become extinct spontaneously through lack of attention and exiguity of interest. For up to the present moment of movements pertaining to religion, many have appeared in the countries of Europe, but non-interference and absence of bigotry have deprived them of importance in a little while they became effaced and dispelled. After this event, there was wrought by a certain Babi a great error, and a grave presumption and crime, which has blackened the page of the history of this sect, and given it an ill name throughout the civilized world. Of this event, the marrow was this, that during the time when the Bab was residing in Nadbirbanjan, a youth, Sadiq by name, became affected with the utmost devotion to the Bab, day and night was busy in serving him, and became bereft of thought and reason. Now when that which befell the Bab in Tabriz took place, this servant, actuated by his own fond fancies, fell into thoughts of seeking blood revenge. And since he knew naught of the details of the events, the absolute autocracy of the Amir Nazam, his unbridled power and sole authority, nor was aware that this sentence had been promulgated absolutely without the cognizance of the royal court, and that the Prime Minister had presumptuously issued the order on his sole responsibility, since, on the contrary, he supposed that agreeably to ordinary custom and usage, the attendants of the court had had a share in, and a knowledge of this sentence, therefore impelled by folly, frenzy, and his evil star, nay, by sheer madness, he rose up from Tabriz and came straight to Tehran, one other person being his accomplice. Then, since the royal train had its abode in Shimran, he thither directed his steps. God is our refuge. By him was wrought a deed so presumptuous that the tongue is unable to declare and the pen loath to describe it. Yet to God be praise and thankfulness that this madman had charged his pistol with shot, imagining this to be preferable and superior to all projectiles. Then all at once commotion arose, and this sect became of such ill repute that still strive and struggle as they may to escape from the curse and disgrace and dishonor of this deed, they are unable to do so. They will recount from the first manifestation of the Bab until the present time, but when the thread of the discourse reaches this event, they are abashed and hang their heads in shame, repudiating the presumptuous actor and accounting him the destroyer of the edifice and the cause of shame to mankind. Now, after the occurrence of this grave matter, all of this sect were suspected. At first there was neither investigation nor inquiry, but afterwards, in mere justice, it was decided that there should be investigation, inquiry, and examination. All who were known to be of this sect fell under suspicion. Baha'u'llah was passing the summer in the village of Ahi, situated one stage from Tehran. When this news was spread abroad and punishment began, every one who was able hid himself in some retreat or fled the country. Amongst these, Mirza Yahya, the brother of Baha'u'llah, concealed himself and a bewildered fugitive in the guise of a dervish, with a kashkul in hand, wandered in mountains and plains on the road to Rasht. But Baha'u'llah rode forth with perfect composure and calmness from Ashiq, and came to Niravaran, which was the abode of the royal train and the station of the imperial camp. Immediately on his arrival he was placed under arrest, and a whole regiment guarded him closely. After several days of interrogation, they sent him in chains and fetters from Shimran to the jail of Tehran. and this harshness and punishment was due to the immoderate importunity of Haji Ali Khan, the Hajibul Dali, nor did there seem any hope of deliverance, until His Majesty the King, moved by his own kindly spirit, commanded circumspection, and ordered this occurrence to be investigated and examined particularly and generally by means of the ministers of the imperial court. Now when Baha'u'llah was interrogated on this matter, he answered in reply, "The event itself indicates the truth of the affair and testifies that this is the action of a thoughtless, unreasoning, and ignorant man, for no reasonable person would charge his pistol with shot when embarking on so grave an enterprise. At least he would so arrange and plan it that the deed should be orderly and systematic. From the very nature of the event, it is clear and evident as the sun that it is not the act of such as myself." So it was established and proven that the assassin had, on his own responsibility, engaged in this grievous action and monstrous deed with the idea and design of taking blood revenge for his master, and that it concerned no one else. And when the truth of the matter became evident, the innocence of Baha'u'llah from this suspicion was established in such wise that no doubt remained for anyone. The decision of the court declared him purity and freedom from this charge, and it became apparent and clear that what had been done with regard to him was due to the efforts of his foes and the hasty folly of the Hajibul Dali. Therefore did the government of eternal duration desire to restore certain properties and estates which had been confiscated, that thereby it might pacify him. But since the chief part of these was lost, and only an inconsiderable portion was forthcoming, none came forward to claim them. Indeed, Baha'u'llah requested permission to withdraw to the supreme shrines of Karbala and Najaf, and after some months, by the royal permission and with the leave of the Prime Minister, set out accompanied by one of the king's messengers for the shrines. Let us return, however, to our original subject. Of the Bab's writings, many remained in men's hands. Some of these were commentaries on and interpretations of the verses of the Quran. Some were prayers, homilies, and hints of the true significance of certain passages. Others were exhortations, admonitions, dissertations on the different branches of the doctrine of the divine unity, demonstrations of the special prophetic mission of the Lord of existing things, Muhammad, and, as it hath been understood, encouragements to amendment of character, severance from worldly states, and dependence on the inspirations of God. But the essence and purport of his compositions were the praises and descriptions of that reality soon to appear which was his only object and aim, his darling and his desire, that is, Baha'u'llah. For he regarded his own appearance as that of a harbinger of good tidings, and considered his own real nature merely as a means for the manifestation of the greater perfections of that one. And indeed he ceased not from celebrating him by day or night for a single instant, but used to signify to all his followers that they should expect his arising, in such wise that he declares in his writings, "I am a letter out of that most mighty book, and a dewdrop from that limitless ocean, and when he shall appear, my true nature, my mysteries, riddles, and intimations will become evident, and the embryo of this religion shall develop through the grades of its being and descent, attain to the station of the most comely of forms, and become adorned with the robe of the blessed of God, the best of creators. And this event will disclose itself in the year AH 1269, which corresponds to the number of the year of After a While, and thou shalt see the mountains which thou thinkest so solid passing away like the passing of the clouds, shall be fulfilled." In short, he so described him that in his own expression, he regarded approach to the divine bounty and attainment of the highest degrees of perfection in the worlds of humanity as dependent on love for him, and so inflamed was he with his flame that commemoration of him was the bright candle of his dark nights in the fortress of Maku, and remembrance of him was the best of companions in the straits of the prison of Shikri. Thereby he obtained spiritual enlargements, with his wine was he inebriated, and at remembrance of him did he rejoice. All of his followers, too, were in expectation of the appearance of these signs, and each one of his intimates was seeking after the fulfillment of these forecasts. Now, from the beginning of the manifestation of the Bab, there was in Tehran, which the Bab called the Holy Land, a youth of the family of one of the ministers and of noble lineage, gifted in every way, and adorned with purity and nobility. Although he combined lofty lineage with high connection, and although his ancestors were men of note in Persia and universally sought after, yet he was not of a race of doctors or of a family of scholars. Now this youth was from his earliest adolescence celebrated amongst those of the ministerial class, both relatives and strangers, for single-mindedness, and was from childhood pointed out as remarkable for sagacity, and held in regard in the eyes of the wise. He did not, however, after the fashion of his ancestors, desire elevation to lofty ranks, nor seek advancement to splendid but transient positions. His extreme aptitude was nevertheless admitted by all, and his excessive acuteness and intelligence were universally avowed. In the eyes of the common folk, he enjoyed a wonderful esteem, and in all gatherings and assemblies he had a marvelous speech and delivery. Notwithstanding lack of instruction and education, such was the keenness of his penetration and the readiness of his apprehension, that when, during his youthful prime, he appeared in assemblies where questions of divinity and points of metaphysic were being discussed, and in presence of a great concourse of doctors and scholars, loosed his tongue, all those present were amazed, accounting this as a sort of prodigy beyond the discernment natural to the human race. From his early years he was the hope of his kindred, and the unique one of his family and race, nay, their refuge and shelter. Page 35. However, in spite of these conditions and circumstances, as he wore a kula on his head and locks flowing over his shoulder, no one imagined that he would become the source of such matters, or that waves of his flood would reach the zenith of his firmament. When the question of the Bab was noised abroad, signs of partiality appeared in him. At the first he apprised his relatives and connections, and the children and dependents of his own circle. Subsequently he occupied his energies by day and night in inviting friends and strangers to embrace the new faith. He arose with mighty resolution, engaged with the utmost constancy in systematizing the principles and consolidating the ethical canons of that society in every way, and strove by all means to protect and guard these people. When he had thus established the foundations in Tehran, he hastened to Mazandaran, where he displayed in assemblies, meetings, conferences, inns, mosques, and colleges a mighty power of utterance and exposition. Whoever beheld his open brow or heard his vivid eulogies perceived him with the eye of actual vision to be a patent demonstration, a latent magnetic force, and a pervading influence. A great number of both rich and poor and of erudite doctors were attracted by his preaching, and washed their hands of heart and life, being so enkindled that they laid down their lives under the sword, dancing with joy. Thus, amongst many instances, one day four learned and accomplished scholars of the divines of Nur were present in his company, and in such wise did he expound that all four were involuntarily constrained to entreat him to accept them for his service. For by dint of his eloquence, which was like evident sorcery, he satisfied these eminent doctors that they were in reality children engaged in the rudiments of study and the merest tiroise, and that therefore they must read the alphabet from the beginning. Several protracted conferences were passed in expounding and elucidating the point and the alif of the absolute, wherein the doctors present were astounded and filled with amazement and astonishment at the seething and roaring of the ocean of his utterance. The report of this occurrence reached the hearing of far and near, and deep despondency fell on the adversaries. The regions of Nur were filled with excitement and commotion at these events, and the noise of this mischief and trouble smote the ears of the citizens of Al-Furush. The chief divine of Nur, Mullah Muhammad, was in Kishlak. When he heard of these occurrences, he sent two of the most distinguished and profound of the doctors, who were possessed of wondrous eloquence, effective or oratorical talent, conclusiveness of argument, and brilliant powers of demonstration, to quench this fire and to subdue and overcome this young man by force of argument, either reducing him to penitence or causing him to despair of the successful issue of his projects. Glory be to God for his wondrous decrees. When these two doctors entered the presence of that young man, saw the waves of his utterance, and heard the force of his arguments, they unfolded like the rose, and were stirred like the multitude, and abandoning altar and chair, pulpit and preferment, wealth and luxury, and evening and morning congregations, they applied themselves to the furtherance of the objects of this person, even inviting the chief divine to tender his allegiance. So when this young man, with a faculty of speech like a rushing torrent, set out for the Amul and Sari, he met with that experienced doctor and that illustrious divine in Kishlak of Nur. And the people assembled from all quarters awaiting the result. His accomplished reverence the divine, although he was of universally acknowledged excellence, and in science the most learned of his contemporaries, nevertheless decided to have recourse to arguery as to whether he should engage in discussion and disputation. This did not prove favorable, and he therefore excused himself, deferring the discussion until some other time. His incompetency and shortcoming thereby became known and suspected, and this caused the adherence, confirmation, and edification of many. In brief outline, the narrative is this. For some, while he wandered about in those districts, after the death of the late Prince Muhammad Shah, he returned to Tehran, having in his mind the intention of corresponding and entering into relations with the Bab. The medium of this correspondence was the celebrated Mullah Abdul Karim of Qazvin, who was the Bab's mainstay and trusted intimate. Now, since a great celebrity had been attained for Baha'u'llah in Tehran, and the hearts of men were disposed towards him, he, together with Mullah Abdul Karim, considered it as expedient that, in face of the agitation amongst the doctors, the aggressiveness of the greater part of the people of Persia, and the irresistible power of the Amir Nizam, whereby both the Bab and Baha'u'llah were in great danger and liable to incur severe punishment, some measure should be adopted to direct the thoughts of men towards some absent person, by which means Baha'u'llah would remain protected from the interference of all men. And since, further, having regard to sundry considerations, they did not consider an outsider as suitable, they cast the lot of this arguery to the name of Baha'u'llah's brother, Mirza Yahya. By the assistance and instruction of Baha'u'llah, therefore, they made him notorious and famous on the tongues of friends and foes, and wrote letters, ostensibly at his dictation, to the Bab. And since secret correspondences were in process, the Bab highly approved of the scheme. So Mirza Yahya was concealed and hidden, while mention of him was on the tongues and in the mouths of men. And this mighty plan was of wondrous efficacy, for Baha'u'llah, though he was known and seen, remained safe and secure, and this veil was the cause that no one outside the sect fathomed the matter or fell into the idea of molestation, until Baha'u'llah quitted Tehran at the permission of the king and was permitted to withdraw to the supreme shrines. When he reached Baghdad and the crescent moon of the month of Muharram of the year A.H. 1269, which was termed in the books of the Bab the year of after a while, and wherein he had promised the disclosure of the true nature of his religion and its mysteries, shone forth from the horizon of the world, this covert secret, as is related, became apparent amongst all within and without the society. Baha'u'llah, with mighty steadfastness, became a target for the arrows of all amongst mankind, while Mirza Yahya, in disguise, passed his time, now in the environs and vicinity of Baghdad, engaged for better concealment in various trades, now in Baghdad itself in the garb of the Arabs. Now Baha'u'llah so acted that the hearts of this sect were drawn towards him, while most of the inhabitants of Iraq were reduced to silence and speechlessness, some being amazed and others angered. After remaining there for 1 year, he withdrew his hand from all things, abandoned relatives and connections, and, without the knowledge of his followers, quitted Iraq alone and solitary, without companion, supporter, associate, or comrade. For nigh upon 2 years he dwelt in Turkish Kurdistan, generally in a place named Sargalu, situated in the mountains, and far removed from human habitations. Sometimes, on rare occasions, he used to frequent Suleymaniyah. Ere long had elapsed, The most eminent doctors of those regions got some inkling of his circumstances and conditions, and conversed with him on the solution of certain difficult questions connected with the most abstruse points of theology. Having witnessed on his part ample signs and satisfactory explanations, they observed towards him the utmost respectfulness and deference. In consequence of this, he acquired a great fame and wonderful reputation in those regions, and fragmentary accounts of him were circulated in all quarters and directions, to wit, that a stranger, a Persian, had appeared in the district of Sulaymaniyya, which hath been, from old, the place whence the most expert doctors of the Sunnites had arisen, and that the people of that county had loosed their tongues in praise of him. From the rumor thus heard, it was known that that person was none other than Baha'u'llah. Several persons, therefore, hastened thither, and began to entreat and implore, and the urgent entreaty of all brought about his return. Now altogether this sect had not been affected with the quaking or consternation at these grievous events, such as the slaughter of their chief and the rest, but did rather increase and multiply. Still, since the Bab was but beginning to lay the foundations wherein he was slain, therefore was this community ignorant concerning his proper conduct, action, behavior, and duty, their sole guiding principle being love for the Bab. This ignorance was the reason that in some parts disturbances occurred, for experience violent molestation, they enclosed their hands in self-defense. But after his return, Baha'u'llah made such strenuous efforts in educating, teaching, training, regulating, and reconstructing this community that in a short while all these troubles and mischiefs were quenched, and the utmost tranquillity and repose reigned in men's hearts, so that according to what hath been heard, it became clear and obvious, even to statesmen, that the fundamental intentions and ideas of the sect were things spiritual, and such as are connected with pure hearts, that their true and essential principles were to reform the morals and beautify the conduct of the human race, and that with things material they had absolutely no concern. When these principles, then, were established in the hearts of this sect, they so acted in all lands that they became celebrated among statesmen for gentleness of spirit, steadfastness of heart, right intent, good deeds, and excellence of conduct. For this people are most well disposed towards obedience and submissiveness, and on receiving such instruction, they conform their conduct and behavior thereto. Formerly, exception was taken to the words, deeds, demeanor, morals, and conduct of this sect. Now objection is made in Persia to their tenets and spiritual state. Now this is beyond the power of man, that he should be able by interference or objection to change the heart and conscience, or meddle with the convictions of anyone. For in the realm of conscience naught but the ray of God's light can command, and on the throne of the heart none but the prevailing power of the King of Kings should rule. Thus it is that one can arrest and suspend the action of every faculty except thought and reflection, for a man cannot even by his own volition withhold himself from reflection or thought, nor keep back his musings and imaginings. At all events, the undeniable truth is this, that for nigh unto 35 years no action opposed to the government or prejudicial to the nation has emanated from this sect or been witnessed on their part, and that during this long period, notwithstanding the fact that their numbers and strength are double what they formerly were, no sound has arisen from any place, except that every now and then learned doctors and eminent scholars, really for the extension of this report through the world and the awakening of men, sentence some few to death. For such interference is not destruction, but edification, when thou regardest the truth, which will not thereby become quenched and forgotten, but rather stimulated and advertised. I will at last relate one short anecdote of what actually took place. A certain person violently molested and grievously injured a certain Babi. The victim unclosed his hand in retaliation and arose to take vengeance, unsheathing his weapon against the aggressor. Becoming the object of censure and reprimand of this sect, however, he took refuge in flight. When he reached Hamadan, his character became known, and as he was of the clerical class, the doctors vehemently pursued him, handed him over to the government, and ordered chastisement to be inflicted. By chance there fell out from the fold of his collar a document written by Baha'u'llah, the subject of which was reproof of attempts at retaliation, censure and reprobation of the search after vengeance, and prohibition from following after lusts. Among other matters, they found these expressions contained in it: Verily God is the quit of the seditious. And likewise, If ye be slain, it is better for you than that you should slay. And when ye are tormented, have recourse to the controllers of affairs and the refuge of the people. And if ye be neglected, then entrust your affairs to the jealous Lord. This is the mark of the sincere and the characteristic of the assured. When the governor became cognizant of this writing, he addressed that person, saying, By the decree of that chief whom you yourself obey, correction is necessary and punishment and chastisement obligatory. If, replied that person, you will carry out all his precepts, I shall have the utmost pleasure in submitting to punishment and death. The governor smiled and let the man go. So Baha'u'llah made the utmost efforts to educate his people and incite them to morality, the acquisition of the sciences and arts of all countries, kindly dealing with all the nations of the earth, desire for the welfare of all peoples, sociability, concord, obedience, submissiveness, instruction of their children, production of what is needful for the human race, and inauguration of true happiness for mankind. And he continually kept sending tracts of admonition to all parts, whereby a wonderful effect was produced. Some of these epistles have, after extreme search and inquiry, been examined, and some portions of them shall now be set down in writing. All these epistles consisted of exhortations to purity of morals, encouragement to good conduct, reprobation of certain individuals, and complaints of the seditious. Amongst others, the sentence was recorded, My captivity is not my abasement. By my life it is indeed a glory unto me. But the abasement is the action of my friends who connect themselves with us and follow the devil in their actions. Amongst them is he who taketh lust and turneth aside from what is commanded, and amongst them is he who followeth the truth in right guidance. As for those who commit sin and cling to the world, they are assuredly not of the people of Baha. So again, Well is it with him who is adorned with the decoration of manners and morals. Verily he is of those who help their Lord with clear, precipitous action. He is God, exalted is his state, wisdom and utterance. The true one, glorious is his glory, for the showing forth of the gems of ideals from the mind of man hath in every age sent a trusted one. The primary foundation of the faith of God and the religion of God is this, that they should not make diverse sects and various paths the cause and reason of hatred. These principles and laws and firm, sure roads appear from one dawning place and shine from one day spring. And these diversities were out of regard for the requirements of the times, season, ages, and epochs. O Unitarians, make firm the girdle of endeavor, that perchance religious strife and conflict may be removed from amongst the people of the world and be annulled. For love of God and his servants engaged in this great and mighty matter. Religious hatred and rancor is a world-consuming fire, and the quenching thereof most arduous, unless the hand of divine might give men deliverance from this unfruitful calamity. Consider a war which happeneth between two states. Both sides have foregone wealth and life. How many villages were beheld as though they were not? This precept is in the position of the light in the lamp of utterance. O people of the world, ye are all the fruit of one tree and the leaves of one branch. Walk with perfect charity, concord, affection, and agreement. I swear by the Sun of Truth, the light of agreement shall brighten and illumine the horizons. The all-knowing Truth hath been and is the witness to this saying. Endeavor to attain to this high supreme station, which is the station of protection and preservation of mankind. This is the intent of the King of Intentions, and this is the hope of the Lord of Hopes. We trust that God will assist the kings of the earth to illuminate and adorn the earth with the refulgent light of the Sun of Justice. At one time we spoke in the language of the law, at another time in the language of the truth and the way, and the ultimate object and remote aim was the showing forth of his high supreme station, and God sufficeth for witness. O friends, consort with all the people of the world with joy and fragrance. If there be to you a word or essence whereof others than you are devoid, communicate it, and show it forth in the language of affection and kindness. If it be received and be effective, the object is attained. And if not, leave it to him, and with regard to him, deal not harshly, but pray. The language of kindness is the lodestone of hearts and the food of the soul. It stands in the relation of ideas to words, and is as an horizon for the shining of the sun of wisdom and knowledge. If the Unitarians had in the latter times acted according to the glorious law, which came after His Highness the seal of the prophets, may not the life of all beside Him be His sacrifice, and had clung to its skirt, the foundation of the fortress of religion would not have been shaken, and populous cities would not have been ruined, but rather cities and villages would have acquired and been adorned with the decoration of peace and serenity. Through the heedlessness and discordance of the favored people and the smoke of wicked souls, the fair nation is seen to be darkened and enfeebled. Had they acted according to what they knew, they would not have been the heedless of the light of the Sun of Justice. This victim hath from earliest days until now been afflicted at the hands of the heedless. They exiled us without cause at one time to Iraq, at another time to Adrianople, and thence to Acre, which was a place of exile for murderers and robbers. Neither is it known where and in what spot we shall take up our abode after this greatest prison house. Knowledge is with God, the Lord of the throne, and of the dust, and the Lord of the lofty seat. In whatever place we may be, and whatever befall us, the saints must gaze with perfect steadfastness and confidence towards the supreme horizon, and occupy themselves in the reformation of the world and the education of the nations. What hath befallen and shall befall hath been and is an instrument and means for the furtherance of the world of unity. Take hold of the command of God and cling thereto. Verily it hath been sent down from beside a wise ordainer. With perfect compassion and mercy have we guided and directed the people of the world to that whereby their souls shall be profited. I swear by the Sun of Truth, which hath shone forth from the highest horizons of the world, that the people of Baha had not and have not any aim, save the prosperity and reformation of the world, and the purifying of the nations. With all men they have been in sincerity and charity. Their outward appearance is one with their inward heart, and their inward heart identical with their outward appearance. The truth of the matter is not hidden or concealed, but plain and evident before men's faces. Their very deeds are the witness of this assertion. Today, let everyone endowed with vision win his way from deeds and signs to the object of the people of Baha, and from their speech and conduct gain knowledge of their intent. The waves of the ocean of divine mercy appear at the utmost height, and the showers of the clouds of his grace and favor descend every moment. During the days of sojourn in Iraq, the suppressed one sat down and consorted with all classes without veil or disguise. How many of the denizens of the horizons entered in enmity and went forth in sympathy? The door of grace was open before the faces of all. With rebellious and obedient did we outwardly converse after one fashion, that perchance the evildoers might win their way to the ocean of boundless forgiveness. The splendors of the name of the Concealer were in such wise manifested that the evildoer imagined that he was accounted of the good. No messenger was disappointed, and no inquirer was turned back. The causes of the aversion and avoidance of men were certain of the doctors of Persia, and the unseemly deeds of the ignorant. By the term doctors, in these passages, are signified those persons who have withheld mankind from the shores of the ocean of unity. But as for the learned who practice their knowledge, and the wise who act justly, they are as the spirit unto the body of the world. Well is it with that learned man, whose head is adorned with the crown of justice, and whose body glorifieth in the ornament of honesty. The pen of admonition exhorteth the friends, and enjoineth on them charity, pity, wisdom, and gentleness. The oppressed one is this day a prisoner. His allies are the hosts of good deeds and virtues, not ranks and hosts and guns and cannons. One holy action maketh a world of earth, highest paradise. This is the end of side 2, tape 1, ending on page 45. Please go to the next tape for continuation.